is remarkable. He comes up towards the winning line under Davy Russell to win his second Randox Health Grand National.
Desert Orchid, watch history being made. Roars of applause. The king's in his county.
Heading down towards the last ride in the champion hurdle, and it's Annie Power comes towards it now. She's about four lengths clear. Vizio, she jumped it perfectly.
Yes, good morning all, and welcome along to the first podcast in our new Monday slot. And the main reason we brought it forward to Monday is in a hope that maybe Ruby Walsh might actually be in good humour on a Monday morning. Ruby?
Yes, Tom. It's a fresh start to a new week. I haven't fallen out with anybody yet, so yeah, we're going well.
Sounds like you've been reading a bit of that Paddy Power book. I think Paddy, he sounds a little bit more upbeat. Maybe Mondays are better than Fridays for him.
Well, it could be, you know, because, I mean, people are annoying these days, you know, because the environment that we're in. And so it's important to obviously take a bit of time for reflection each day, especially in the morning. Just take a moment to just breathe and just, you know, take it all in.
In through the nose and out through the mouth, Ruby. Slow and steady as always. We've got lots to talk about. And with our new Monday slot, the news is fresh in our minds of Holly Doyle burning up the weekend. A five-timer at Windsor, and then another three at Yarmouth. Ruby, the hottest property in town, Holly Doyle, she can do no wrong.
Yeah, she had an incredible day on Saturday. You know, from Indian Creek in the first to Mistress Nelly, her last winner. But it was so almost simple, the way she rode them. It was all quite alike. She was across the junction in Windsor. She was on the front end, on the far side, got them all over onto the far running rail, bar the last one. I mean, Charlie Bennett was the only guy that got between Holly Doyle and that far running rail. And she had to work hard on Mistress Nelly. But she was very good at it as well, whipping her left hand compared to in her right hand on the other four winners. And she just tactically had Windsor worked out on Saturday.
Paddy, we've seen it time and again, particularly young riders can come with a bit of a streak and then, unfortunately, their momentum kind of fizzles out a little bit. But it just seems like Holly Doyle is going to keep this going, doesn't it?
Yeah, she's obviously a really talented rider. And I love that the fact that she did plan out the tactics. And I don't know if she walked the track before and found that fresher strip of ground or something. Because you see the likes of jockeys as good as Christoph Soumillon at the weekend as well, doing the same thing on Telecaster, just finding that better strip in by the rail and just doing working hell for leather just to get that strip of ground and putting that extra bit of work in maybe some of the other jockeys might have been slightly lazier or not have done the same amount of homework as her. But it's great to see it when it pays off. And I do think because she is resilient and she's picking up more and more rides and she's very amiable and everything like that, and she's getting plenty of press coverage and everything. So, yeah, I think she's here to stay, and she could be even a title challenger, I think.
The weather played a bit of havoc in the UK over the weekend. No Ben Battle in the celebration mile, but that, without him even, Subjectivist was a very, very impressive winner, Ruby. Do you think maybe just conditions brought the best out in him?
I would say so, Tom. It was more like watching a National Hunt race than a flat race, wasn't it? And even watching the distances as they went by the line. I mean, from Subjectionist back to Cabaletta in second, it was the same distance to the third and almost the fourth. It was like watching a three-mile chase more so than a mile and six flat race. But Subjectivist handled the ground. Joe Fanning kept it very simple. And it was a race that people had talked up about being tactical. How quick would Joe Fanning go? Would Cabaletta be too free? But typical Joe Fanning, Mark Johnson just kept it incredibly simple, and Subjectivist galloped them all into the ground.
Paddy, we're used to kind of summers being dominated by flat racing superpowers, Coolmore, Godolphin, the Power family. But Shadwell are having an unbelievable summer, and now Jim Crowley over the line with 2,000 winners.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy for him, actually, because he just seems like a good, decent bloke. And he's obviously had a Royal Ascot to remember. And then it's just kind of kicked on. Like week after week, you just seem to see the same colours going in on whether it's a handicap or a big race. And so he's had a real mixture, a mixed bag of success this season so far with regard to types of horse that are winning, not relying on one or two. And yeah, I guess it's a great achievement. It's a career milestone. And yeah, good luck to him.
Yeah, we had lots of action at the Curragh as well on Friday. Of course, Frank and Paddy's tip, Quizzical, nabbed in the Cambridge Triple, laugh if you want. And Ken Condon coming out the wrong side of a tussle in the Round Tower. His Teresa Mendoza, looks like she'll still have a career going forward, Ruby, won't she? While she's beaten, the bubble isn't burst.
No, and look, we had a lot of rain. Ground was a bit on the slower side. And maybe it was just too slow for Teresa Mendoza. But no, I wouldn't say all is definitely not lost, Tom. It was strange to have such a cracking card in the Curragh Friday afternoon. Some good racing in Navan on Saturday, and then nothing on yesterday. I just think that was bizarre. That Curragh card, to me, was just lost for the quality it was on a Friday afternoon.
And finally, all change in the Jockey Club as CEO Delia Bushell steps down from her role. Her resignation letter was pretty spectacular. It was published in the Racing Post. And Ruby, it looks like it could be a little bit of a rocky time for the Jockey Club.
It looks like it's going to rumble on anyway, Tom. Delia Bushell obviously came to the Jockey Club from, she previously worked for Sky and BT Sport. But yeah, look, it's doesn't look straightforward, but Delia Bushell has departed nonetheless.
Paddy, never an easy time of things when two parties part ways with fireworks like this, sure, Sam.
No, honestly, obviously don't have a rashes about the ins and outs of it, but just from what you're reading, it's like, I know it's probably a bad thing really because, you know, it's what dirty washing in public, but it's kind of pretty exciting as well. It's kind of like watching a bit gossipy and watching a soap opera or something, but it seems like he said, she said, and there's it will rumble on, like Ruby said. Basically, she's saying that she brought in for a bit to make some changes, but as soon as she tried to make the changes, then there was resistance to change. So that being the case, you'd have some sympathy for her, but and then the other side saying like she wasn't the nicest person to work for or whatever. So I think we probably will find out more than we should about this, because it seems like there's leaks coming from everywhere. It's like a bit of a colander of information, because the internal review was leaked to the press and everything. So it sounds like we're going to hear more than we actually should about this. So in a kind of a Schadenfreude kind of way, it's going to be interesting anyway.
Ruby Walsh, one to watch from the weekend?
Well, there was a couple actually, Tom. I thought Galileo Chrome in Navan under Shane Cross with Joseph O'Brien looked a real ledger horse when he won the 8 stakes. And I thought Western Victory finished run-up to Paloma Blue in Wexford. She'd be hard to beat in the mare's novice chase in the stall in a fortnight's time.
And now it's time for this week's Racing Gold.
Oh, come on, rock that win. Just get a load of old granddad, the greatest rave he's ever had.
You could make an argument that this week's commemoration is not so much Racing Gold as Stud Gold. Or should that be Platinum? But the path to becoming an elite sire has to start at the racecourse. Dane Hill only ran in 9 races. He finished 3rd in the 2000 guineas at Newmarket and 4th at the Curragh in the Irish equivalent. So far, so fine, but he proved more effective over shorter distances. And after a Group 3 success over 6 furlongs at Ascot, he went to Haydock for the Group 1 Sprint Cup with a 3-1 chance.
Ulster's on the rails. Dane Hill's tracking that one. Cricket Ball is looking for run on the rails. And on the outside, A Prayer for Wings is coming fast. But now Shuttlecock Corner comes under pressure and is joined by Silverfling in the centre. Carrera drops away. Here comes Dane Hill on the outside as they come down to the final furlong. It's Silverfling pressed now by Dane Hill. Dane Hill storms into the lead from Silverfling. A Prayer for Wings finishing fast on the outside. But it's Dane Hill going to win this race for the second year running for Scarlet of Dollar. Dane Hill storms away to win the Ladbrokes Sprint. Dane Hill wins it. Cricket Ball runs onto his second. A Prayer for Wings is third.
Rock back to only two he'll ever know. Maybe soon he'll have to go. But that won't rock and roll. Granddad's rock, rock, whack-a-doo. Whack, whack-a-doo.
There are sires and there are sires of sires. Dane Hill might be the granddaddy of them all. 16 of Dane Hill's sons have themselves gone on to sire 20 or more stakes winners at stud. And he made as much impact at Australia's Arrowfield stud as he did at Coolmore. Maybe Ruby can tell us a little about what exactly that means. You hear the phrase shuttle stallion thrown around a bit, Ruby. What does that mean?
Shuttle basically means, Tom, that they walk in both hemispheres. So Dane Hill in his pomp would have been covering theirs in the Northern Hemisphere in Ireland from February sort of 10th till the end of May. And then he would be shuttled or transported to Australia, where the breeding season begins on the 1st of September and runs into November. He did spend a year in Japan as well, which is in the Northern Hemisphere, rather than coming back to Coolmore. But he was more of a hit initially in Australia, and it was his success in Australia that made the Europeans start to believe in him, and Coolmore bought into him. I think they gave somewhere around $24 million to buy him outright after a while. But he was a hell of a good stallion.
And he's still kind of a massive part of the industry, isn't he? Like, Coolmore have kind of made their business out of Galileo horses, out of Dane Hill mares over the last couple of years. If you look at a lot of their top performers at their not so far, their recent pedigree, it'll be that cross, won't it?
It will be that cross. And I think that is the drive in Coolmore at the moment, is to find an outcross, because you could only in-cross so often before it gets too close and gets too inbred. So the big drive in Coolmore is for an outside stallion at the minute, and that's what they're looking for.
Paddy, in terms of Dane Hill himself, kind of, that was Julian Wilson, the commentator there. They were kind of very romantic days for racing, weren't they? And particularly on the flat. And there was a time as well when Khaled Abdullah and those colours were starting to become a little bit more prominent, weren't they?
Yes, we had at that stage. I mean, I'm obviously far too young to remember those days that well, but at that stage, first of all, the commentators had really posh accents, and they were only got excited at the very end of a race, like Ruby described about Desi Scallop, kind of the way he revs up his commentary as the race goes on. Nearly he speeds it up as the horse are speeding up, but there it's very much stiff upper lip the whole way through, and at the end there's something memorable in the final furlong. But anyway, besides that, but yeah, Canada Blood of Colours, we're starting to get, did I say that out loud? Yeah, we're starting to get a bit more prominent. And I guess we didn't know at that stage how much racing would be dominated by a small group of a flat racing, group of a smaller group of owners. I mean, it changes a bit with Godolphin and all that kind of thing in the years to come, but and the emergence of Coolmore. But I guess that was the start of when you saw the big Arab money come into the game.
And it is like Khaled Abdullah's impact through Judmont now, Ruby, is absolutely massive. I mean, Frankel, Kingman, Oasis Dream, the list is endless, and they're all really high quality, really well-bred horses, aren't they?
The Judmont pedigrees are incredible, and Judmont mares, when they go to the sales, always make quite a bit of money. You'd wonder, 8-10 years ago, would Judmont have sold Dame Hill? They probably wouldn't have. They might have kept them as they got bigger as well, but look to do, as you said, Tom, Frankel, Kingman, etc. But it's an incredible bloodline and incredible families, and it's one of the most rock solid breeding operations in the world, and it's a profitable operation as well, which many aren't.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
And now it's time for this week's Dear Paddy. Paddy, your betting clinic continues, so allow me to read this one for you while you come up with something spiritual to say. My friend Mark and I agree on a great many things. Our favourite Spice Girl, that pints are class, and our dislike of aftertimers. It is on this latter point, however, that we have a divergence of views, and we need Paddy to act as arbiter in this important matter. It is my contention that an aftertimer is someone who claims to have backed a winner when he hasn't, or exaggerates the amount he has had on after the event. Mark's view is that once a bet is struck and wins, you can only then discuss it with those you told about the winning bet before the event, or be forever labelled an aftertimer. He is unclear whether you're permitted to roar your selection home, or whether doing so marks you as an aftertimer, and you are instead supposed to remain entirely noiseless throughout the exciting race. A bit like John Gosden, like you said earlier. Anyway, who's right? And who's your favourite Spice Girl?
Okay, this is actually a bit more straightforward than, what was his name again? Thomas, than Thomas made out. Thomas is like overthinking this massively. Like, so first of all, like, forget about this. You can't cheer at home. The whole point of having a bet is to enjoy it and cheer at home. And before the race, tell as many people as you like, just be careful with anti-post. It's, I mean, it's, if you're going to brag about it, back this at 20s when it's 6-4, you're going to have to do it beforehand in case it gets beat. But, you know, that's pretty annoying, isn't it? Like when you get Frank on to the tips that, oh, this yoke, he's 5-1. I backed him at 25s yesterday, but he's 5-1 for you lads. So that's annoying. That's kind of a bit of after timing before the race. But what after timing in my head what actually is, and the most annoying one, is when a favourite gets beat and some person, you're after backing it, right? And he gets beat and some fella says, that had no chance. Not like it was an even money favourite, but it had zero chance as far as he was concerned. Because it's, the race is over, it was 1,000-1. And that's really annoying because he's wrong. Of course, had a bloody chance. It's a favorite in a race, right? But the way he goes on, as if like, you know, you, because you're backed, you're an absolute idiot, right? Because when you have, if you lose money, it's annoying, right? So you don't want someone to rub it in. So I think an after timing is that, and people like that, you know, there's probably a special place in hell for them. But they really, you really shouldn't have them near you, for they will ruin an enjoyable day out of the races or whatever. So nothing spiritual this week, because it is something, as you might be able to gather, that I feel quite passionate about. And I actually really, it's like, I really hate after timers.
I'm twice as confused after your answer than I was before the question was asked.
Okay, but an after timer is someone who, I'm trying to simplify it, someone who claims that they would have done something after knowing the result. And obviously they would have backed those numbers in the lottery or whatever. So that's what an after timer is. Someone who just, and it's obviously complete bullshit when you talk to them, and you, and there's some unwritten weird politeness that you don't call them up on it, when in fact you should just punch them in the nose.
I thought an after-timer was someone that never backs a loser.
Not in my head.
And who's your favourite Spice Girl?
It's Scary Spice, definitely.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
Yes, we're delighted to be joined by our special guest on today's episode of From the Horse's Mouth. It's Mr. Roger Teal. Roger, how are you? All set for a big weekend ahead with Oxted?
Yeah, as set as we can be. Yeah, no, all good. All good to go.
Your celebration at the July Cup almost went viral. I don't think I haven't seen moves like it in many, many years. You must have been absolutely over the moon, and for a yard of your size, like, that is a massive achievement, like, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit embarrassing when I saw the footage afterwards, but we'll get a little bit emotional, should we say.
Oh, it's much better to get emotional. You should never be embarrassed. It's great to celebrate those big wins because they mean so much, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, we were walking on air for a week afterwards. You know, it was an unbelievable feeling.
Hey, Doc, this weekend, the wheel keeps turning. You try and enjoy the moment, but you get caught up a little bit in planning ahead. So you've got to this stage. Tell us, how is Oxted and what kind of form is he going into the weekend?
Yeah, we couldn't be happy with him. He's in great shape. He looks fantastic. Harry's delighted with the way he's working. We're all good to go. I think we're going to be running on softer conditions than we've faced in the past. But he's bred for it. Mum and Dad both like the soft going. So fingers crossed he can handle the situation, you know.
Roger, his only previous run on slowish ground wasn't his best run by any manner of means, and he is so good on quick ground. I know you can't do anything about it, but it must surely be a concern.
It is a concern, but I think there was other reasons for that last year. I mean, he was just a frame of a horse last year. He was weak. Things didn't go. I probably ran him too soon. He's a horse that I like to space out between his runs, and I think probably there's more of that to do with that than him handling the surface, you know.
And the way he does handle quick ground, if he wants to win in Haydock, could you see yourself travelling further afield with him after that?
Absolutely. I mean, if he runs well on Saturday and handles the conditions, then you'd be going to the Champions Day at Ascot, you know, because that always generally comes up soft. We've got the Breeders' Cup in mind, but I think we're just taking one race at a time at the moment and see how he handles conditions on Saturday.
Well, speaking of tracks coming up soft, Roger, we have a question in on social media for you, and this person is wondering if France maybe would be an option. Nene asks, Who does Roger think the biggest danger is to Oxted on Saturday? And if he wins, well, in brackets, which he will, would the Prix de l'Abbé be considered next? Or is Batash maybe not worth taking on over 5 furlongs?
Well, our trip is 6. We haven't tried 5 yet. We're not ruling it out, obviously. But I think the biggest danger on Saturday would be Dream of Dreams comes into there. The Owen Burroughs horse is a nice horse. When he turns up in form, he's a very hard horse to beat, Tadib. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a decent field. Golden Horde is back there again. I see he's entered. The Tin Man, you know, conditions might suit the Tin Man. Or whatever declares, it's going to be a decent field, and we're going to be at the top of our game to win it, you know.
But regardless of what happens on Saturday, Roger, like a horse like Oxted for you with a bit of luck, he should be on the scene for a while, which makes things just a lot, not necessarily easier. It's always going to be a pressurized situation, but it keeps you at the front of people's minds for a lot longer, doesn't it? Just to have him running in those big group races on a regular basis.
Well, absolutely. I mean, he's still only a 4-year-old. So if we mind him properly, you know, we've got years ahead of us. We've got that in the back of our minds. We don't want to put too many miles on the clock as a youngster and, you know, just pick and choose our races as we go.
Did it surprise you how good he was in the July Cup? No. Or did you always know? I mean, how can you know that, like, the horse is, you know, you have a good one, but how can you know he's going to be Group 1 good? Do you know what I mean?
Well, the Abernant helped point us in the right direction. You know, as soon as he won the Portland last year with that weight as a 3-year-old, and, you know, I know when this horse is right, when you get him right, he's very, very impressive. And at home, in his work at home, he's electric. And like I say, we needed the Abernant to just to back us up and make sure we knew what we were talking about. And obviously he won that in good style, and we knew he wasn't right. We knew he was going to come on for the run. So yeah, it wasn't a surprise to see him in the July Cup. And he won the race well, you know, he controlled the race superbly. Kieran gave him an absolute peach. He gets on with him so well. And look, it's history now, but like I say, we were very confident going into it.
And are you going to keep the dance for Group 1s, or are you going to do it after every win?
I get like that in a cellar. No, it was a... I suppose I got a bit carried away. I actually, when Luke Harvey was chasing me down the track in the Portland, when he won the Portland. So, yeah, I was making an idiot of myself that day as well. I'm a bit like Clive Britton, not John Gosden. I'm not as cool as John Gosden.
Just as a casual fan, when you're watching the telly, I mean, it's great to see that. But there's almost, I find it really frustrating when you watch, again, and sometimes it happens where, especially over Zoom and that, where, you know, the connections of a big winner who are like one of the big, huge, like Coolmore or something like that. They're just going, they just win a Group 1 or whatever. And it's just, yeah, man, we're happy enough. Yeah, you know, let's see what's next. Where you're kind of going, Jesus, like, yeah, enjoy the moment.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's so hard to train any winner. You know, it's so competitive, and you need everything to go right on the day in any race. And but you get days like that, you got to bloody enjoy it, you know, because it was a fantastic day. And I can't imagine just standing there as cool as a cucumber, just going, oh yeah, you know. It's like Jose Mourinho.
If you're going to be going, just say, for example, it all works out and you're going to be going Breeders' Cup, where it's this year, next year, whatever it turns out to be. Like, in terms of logistics, I mean, I'm assuming, without doing any research, I'm assuming that you haven't had a runner at the Breeders' Cup before. So how do you even go about that? Go about finding out how to do it and or whatever, and get the horse over there, or to get help? Is there...
No, the International Racing Bureau, they help all with that. They do all the arrangements. So you just make the entry, and they help you and guide you in what we've got to do. So yeah, there's plenty of help out there. So they get involved and take all that hassle out for you.
Roger, busy a couple of days ahead for you. You have a lot of runners on Wednesday, particularly. You have a couple in at Bath, Utoxeter and one at Wolves. Any of them worth keeping an eye out for?
Swiss Pride's been knocking at the door. He got Pete two short heads last day. You know, he's due a win. Kalaki's Tale, if it rains, if we had more rain, you'd fancy her even stronger. She has to have soft in the description. But she was a bit unlucky last day. She got collared in the final strides at Chepstow. So that both those could run well. Rosie Royal's a solid old horse. You know, she's 8 years old now, but there's still a race in her. So yeah, we could have a good day Wednesday.
And just quickly ahead to the weekend, Roger, you've got one in the Cambridgeshire Bear Force 1, 33-1 with Paddy Power at the moment. What kind of chance do you give Bear Force 1?
Yeah, I like him. He's a lovely big horse. I mean, he's a huge horse. If he can get in the main event, I think he's progressed each run. He ran well last day. Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, I think it's a sort of race that would suit him down to the ground, you know.
Well, Rogers Heel, the very best of luck for the weekend. We wish you well. And yeah, please just think of us when you're dancing on television.
I will do, guys. Might be not the first thing that comes into mind.
Cheers, Roger.
Best of luck,
guys. Thank you. Best of luck. Bye now.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Ruby, I wanted to get your quick take as we build up to Irish Champions Weekend. We've got a number of English horses entries, one of which being Guyette. What's going to happen here? Because we know the quarantine rules in the UK and Ireland are very different at the moment.
Yeah, it looks like, reading Charlie Appleby, that Godolphin through HRI are trying to seek an elite athlete exemption for their jockeys for the weekend that's in it. I probably agree with them. I think you could bring William Buick or James Doyle, whichever one it is, into Leopardstown or the Curra, and have to meet nobody, be near nobody, etc., etc. Now, it is a bit of a hot potato, I suppose, but I think if Godolphin can't bring their own riders, are they really going to put somebody on Guyette who has never ridden him? He doesn't look that straightforward a horse. William Buick has formed a great relationship with him, and I think for horse racing in Ireland, Guyette is a huge draw to the Champion Stakes. He's the highest rated horse in the world, theoretically, therefore the best horse in the world. And I think it'll be a bit of a miss if the people at the top can't work out a way of getting William Buick in and out of this country without meeting anyone.
If, and I know you love hypothetical questions, if neither William Buick nor James Doyle could come over, but Guyette was to come, who do you think would be in for the ride?
That's a good question. I hadn't put a huge amount of thought into that, Thomas, and I am trying to think where Godolphin have horses here at the moment. They have a couple with Jim Bulger, so you would imagine Kevin Manning would be in the running, but it'd be someone who has ridden for them or rides for them, I would think. And yeah, Colin Keane's an obvious one as well. I can't imagine Geraldine's have a runner in the race, so he would be available. The Coolmore jockey or the Ballydoyle jockeys will all be riding in it. Shane Foley, Jessie, will she have a runner? She could have. It'd be somewhere up near the very top, I'll say.
Paddy, who do you think might nab the guy as Ride, say, hypothetically, if he comes and the two retained jockeys aren't able to make the trip?
I think Ruby's very first suggestion there, Kevin Manning, somebody very experienced, I would imagine, because just to be able to judge the pace and hold on to guys as much as possible and try and settle them down. So yeah, I think Kevin Manning would be the number one choice.
Lovely stuff. Time for a few quick questions from social media before we finish. Grant James Thomas asks, can Ruby give us a dark horse for the National Hunt season now it's stepping up? Perhaps an improved one from the handicap ranks or something else out of the point to points? Also, is Ruby involved in the ownership of any horses? Thanks.
I know my wife is involved in the ownership of Aiton Bob. It's the only horse that we have. I'm not involved in the ownership of any more. And a dark one for the National Hunt season, I thought St. Roy was impressive in the county hurdle, but I think he'll stay hurdling. He could progress through the ranks.
Very good. Nick Schneider asks, good win for Holly Doyle on Ladon DeVee, despite the horse being so keen at the start of the race and burning up a lot of gas. Are there training techniques to help prevent this? a little Tai Chi or meditation, perhaps. Paddy, would you? You're a great man for meditation or Tai Chi. Would you believe in that for horses, maybe?
Well, they have. I mean, I guess, I don't know. They have kind of horse whispers, don't they? I remember I was out for dinner once and Jean-Claude Rouget was there and he had a horse whisper. He didn't speak any English. So the great conversation was sitting beside him. Couldn't understand the word he was saying. He couldn't understand the word I was saying. So it was a great conversation. But that's the reason why they have cheek pieces and all sorts of stuff, isn't it? To try and relax the horse in some way. So yeah, I'm sure there are training techniques. Usually it's about just time and time again. I mean, the horses, as sprinters particularly, they learn while they're racing. So the more experience they get, they learn how to settle and how to become a racehorse.
I was out for dinner once with Jean-Claude Rouget. Ruby, what is the actual answer to the question before Paddy to try and decide that by dropping a massive name? What is the actual answer to that question? How do you get horses to settle? Or is it just the fact that Holly Doyle is an exceptionally good rider and can get them to calm down?
Well, the second last thing you would do is put cheek pieces on the horse to make him settle. The last thing you would do is put blinkers on him to make him settle. They're for the absolute opposite effect, Tom. They're trying to rev them up and make them go forward. You would probably go for a hood, earplugs, maybe even an eye shield. But it's positioning in a race as well, Tom. If you can try and get a keen horse not in amongst the other rivals, get them behind the horse and have rivals only on one side, you're rather than both sides of you, is to try and make the horse less competitive. Horses are competitive animals, so you want to put them in as least a competitive place in the race as you can to try and get them to settle.
So there you have it. If you have a keen horse at home, listen to Paddy Power and throw a set of blinkers on it. Right, there's plenty of racing in Ireland and the UK during the week. Lads, I know you were told to have a look at the Group 3 in Gorn at midweek, but if you don't have a selection for it, that's okay.
Who told us to do that?
Oh, well, you did. It just goes to show you didn't read anything. Anyway, lads, thanks a million. That's Monday in a nutshell. And thanks a million, really. That's all I have to say. You haven't read the script. Good luck.
Cheers.
Thanks, Tom.
Righto, that's all we've got time for. Thanks to Messrs. Walsh, Power and Teal. And of course, thanks to you for listening. We hope that was a nice way to start your week. But we're back on Friday with tips galore for the weekend. Frank Hickey will be joining us once again. So make sure to tune in for that. But for now, I've been Tom Nugent. And that has been From the Horse's Mouth.
From the Horse's Mouth is a Muddy Knees Media production for Paddy Power.
Guess where I was for dinner when I met him? In John Gosden's gaff. I should have said that as well.